offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, joining you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam is Prem and Arvind from Team Radio Sai. And we are here to continue our fortnightly discussion on the beautiful book, a compilation by Dr. John Hislop, named Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba, essentially the beautiful interactions that he has had with Swami on various occasions in various locations too. And we do that every fortnight. We've been doing it for, I think, at least 25 weeks or so now. And we've seen how the conversation varies in topic, in themes, and we just follow whatever is the conversation, whatever is the discussion. We don't choose, we don't leave out any part, and that is why sometimes you will find that we are at a loss of words just to explain what the discussion is all about, because it's a very profound and a very in-depth discussion on a specific theme which Dr. Hislop or any one of the visitors ask. I think today too is going to be one of those discussions, but at least I think Swami has been a little graceful on us, because he has sent one more of our brothers to join us in this discussion. And before we go into what we're going to be talking about today, what is the question that Hislop is asking, let's invite Brother Ranganath Raju, who is here to join us in today's satsang. So along with Arvind, Brother Raju also is here. So let's welcome both of them. Sai Ram Raju and Sai Ram Arvind.
Sai Ram, brother.
Sai Ram Raju, Sai Ram Prem, Sai Ram to all our listeners. We'll be continuing actually the conversations where Bhagwan delves into the workings of the mind. Actually, it is Hislop who delves into that. He wants to know, he's eager, and it's almost like the mind is a kind of a border between mundane worldly life and spiritual life, and the mind is an enigma. It is a champion on one hand, it is an obstacle on the other, and therefore so much is there that is discussed about the mind. It is not surprising that a spiritual practitioner like Hislop is asking all these questions. And we are grateful to Hislop for asking these questions, because to each one of us in our own different levels of spiritual progress or our levels of sadhana, it is helpful. If I remember right, the last fortnight when we were doing this conversations with Sai, we were speaking about how Swami says that one of the most important means for keeping the mind away from harmful activities is work. Man is made to work hard, and if one is working hard in service to the Lord, in one way or the other, the mind will not have time to be occupied with the useless random thoughts. And if there is no outside work, then the work of spiritual endeavor should go on in the way of meditation, recitation of the name, reading good books, talking with good people, that is satsang, and so on. So, in the discussion on the mind, Swami says that working wholeheartedly, completely involved in what you're doing, is one best way to ensure that your mind is focused. Basically, before this, you know, we saw how Swami had advised Hislop that don't try to quieten or control the mind, because the nature of the mind is to be wavering, it keeps running around. Swami compares it to the scampering of a mouse or the movement of a snake. It's constantly there. He says it's like the shimmer on the peacock feathers. Even when it is still, it appears to be moving, and therefore trying to quieten the mind and control it is not the right technique. Instead, Swami says, ensure that it always indulges in good thoughts, good words and good deeds. And that's why Swami says that hard work is a best way to keep away all the bad things. And when there is no hard work, at that time, you can, you know, focus on strengthening the good things via all these meditation, recitation of the name, reading good books, talking to good people.
And when you talk of this work being an instrument to control the mind, that reminds me of a very beautiful quote that Swami said some time ago, and that kind of a practical applicability in my own life. Hmm. Now, Swami, at one point in one of the discourses, he says, when you fill your mind with God, and when that mind is kind of used for the work, only thing that has to happen is success. You will have to succeed in that whatever work that you do. So I by training, I'm an economist, and I kind of build models for estimating demand for various automobile segments, consumer segments, etc. And econometric equations are not easy to build. Take a lot of time. it to such an extent that one equation would take almost a month mm-hmm. to get that precise specification. So it was one such time where I was going through this tough challenge of building an equation. But come what may, do whatever, I was running model up to 3,000 variables. The model is not just coming on to what it should be. So at one point after I gave up, that is when I came across this quote of Swami. He says, fill the mind with the Lord. So all I did was, whenever I opened the SPSS or whenever I opened those Excel files and the economic equations, I kept chanting Sai Ram, and I kept thinking of Swami, I kept thinking about his form. It was around 1.5 hours. When we get an opportunity, I can even show you the equations. But for what I have struggled for 27 days, that I could not achieve, the R square was sitting on 50 to 53. R square just climbed up to 94 in next 1.5 hours. It was completely based on the recitation of the Lord's name, just thinking of his form, basically cluing the mind to Swami.
So what is this R square?
R square is basically the ability of the equation to explain the variance.
So you get a value which helps in explaining.
Yes, explaining the variables, the variance in the variables. It's kind of a degree to which the equation is good or bad.
That's accurate.
So that's where I have realized with my own personal experience. It was very, I would say, very draining experience in some sense, but it was a very sweet experience that stayed with me for quite long. That you insert Lord's name, insert Lord God in every work that you do, and you end up only succeeding. It will never fail.
You know, it reminds me of an incident which we have oft quoted that happened during the early years of the Gram Seva, before the formal Gram Seva began in 1999 or 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So when Swami used to send boys on this one-off Gram Seva, Swami used to be very eager to find out where they went, which village they went. One day Swami comes out and he says, did you meet Radhamma? And nobody knew who Radhamma is, and they were looking at Swami, wondering whom is he referring to. Swami then reminded them, saying that lady, you know, who gave you ragi and then fed you buttermilk. Ah, they remembered. You know, it's almost like food is something that the head may forget, the stomach doesn't forget. So they remembered Radhamma. And then Swami asked them, do you know what is Radhamma? You know, what's her profession? First of all, they did not know Radhamma, if not for the ragi, sankati and buttermilk. How will they know what's her profession? Swami himself said, she is a midwife. A midwife is a person, is a lady usually who assists in child delivery when there is no professional doctor around. So usually she is trained as a nurse possibly. So Swami said she is a midwife. Swami added saying, not just a midwife, she is the best midwife in the world. And all the boys sat in awe at this statement. And then Swami asked, why is she the best midwife in the world? Again, no answer. Swami himself said, you know, before she does any work, she always thinks of me and tells, Swami, you come and do it. And then she begins to work. And then Swami added with a mischievous smile, when I go and do it, it has to be the best, right? So, you know, it's so nice to listen to these incidents because it proves that, you know, thinking of God or bringing in God into every action of our life is not like a distraction. It doesn't make us unprofessional. It doesn't take away from the focus required in the work. It actually helps us focus better when we do our work as worship, when we do our task, thinking that we are doing it as an offering to our Lord. It becomes more professional. It becomes more perfect.
This also reminds me of those days, Baru. You remember when Swami would call us, for programs almost on a daily basis. And we would not have time to prepare. I'm sure you recollect those days when Swami would be coming for us and he would ask us, what is the program? All the time that he would have is, by the time Swami would reach to the...
By the time he completes the darshan round,
we have to be up with the program. And those are the times where Swami would expect us to speak for long. I have kind of tried to remember points 2-3 times, but with that experience, I was not able to recollect anything. I just kept staring into Swami's eyes. And Swami also staring back. I did not know what happened, but that speech or those words just started flowing. That is when I realized this technique of speaking without preparing. All that we have to do is go there, stand up and look into Swami and speak. Mm-hmm. I have done it more than 60 times. Not even once have I failed. I do not know how it happens, but you look at Swami and you give yourself to Swami. And those thoughts, they come, the words take form, and it just flows.
See, the beautiful thing here is the spontaneity and extemporaneous nature of the deed getting done. But the difficult part here is, you know, recreating that environment or atmosphere, I feel. Because when Swami is sitting there right in front of you, there is that magical connect that happens and you see that flow coming in. And as, you know, Swami assures His love, we shall see later on in this conversation also. Swami just says, you just make that connect. Everything will flow after that. The challenge now for us, I feel, is to somehow get that connect. You know, in the presence of the physical form, it is possible.
And I think that is where this meditation comes into play. You meditate deeply in the sense you concentrate on the form of the Lord or the deeds or the words that He said or the deeds that He did. And automatically that connect gets established. You know, I had ended up attending some 10-day Vipassana course, and I think earlier also we kind of discussed, but probably in my life till now, these 35 years, those 10 days were probably some of the best moments of proximity that I spent with Swami. Swami was not there physically, but just contemplating on Him, I was able to feel His presence so much that the master himself, the person who conducted the meditation sessions, he had to literally stop in one of the sessions in the middle and call me and said, "Where are you coming from? There is something unique about the way you meditate, and people around you seem to express different vibrations, whatever." That he saw, he felt, and so when I told him this, he just smiled and said, "Okay, go back," and said, "Now I understand why this is happening." So I think that is where this meditation or connecting, kind of latching your mind to God, comes into play.
In fact, as we go ahead, we shall see that Swami advises this. Swami actually goes on to say that one might find it difficult to surrender to God, but every man surrenders to time. You know, this is important here, because what if you don't have you say an experience with God, you are able to connect to God because you have seen Swami, you have considered Swami as your God. There are all kinds of people. There are people who have not seen Swami. There are people who don't believe in the existence of God, or people think that God is an excuse made up by those who are weak. In such instances, Swami says, one might find it difficult to surrender to God, but every man surrenders to time. Take time as God. Day by day, one's life is shortened and one surrenders his life to that time. Time conquers one life. That time is God. Therefore, first there is work, then wisdom, then love. And the time will come in a person's life when work itself is love, or work itself is God.
I think the point that Swami is making is very, very important, in the sense of none of us are really there in a place where we can constantly contemplate about God, like some of the great devotees Swami speaks about, or Radha or Meera or someone. At the same time, we are not even in a place where we don't need that. You know, we can constantly do our work and we don't need to think of God. We are karma yogis in that sense. We are in a place where we need that mind to be occupied with work, with productive work. At the same time, you need, as we saw last time, I think this was typically what any of our student days were like. One part of the day was so completely packed, you couldn't do anything else. You were thinking, you had no time, and Swami would say that, I'm keeping you all so occupied that you will not have any time to think of anything, which could distract you. At the same time, those 3-4 hours in Mandir was filled with silence. Nothing to do. You cannot do anything else sitting there other than reading your book, and even reading your book after some time, you know, how long can you read that? Some of us who are not used to sitting in one place and reading our subject book for so long would find it difficult. And invariably you would find that many of the people would actually turn to meditation. Yes. Right? Not meditation in the sense of, as Raju was saying, Vipassana or any technique like that, but just closing your eyes and going within and probably thinking of Swami or, you know, some, and it would happen so spontaneously when Swami would, you know, seed some incidents in that time that you're there in the Mandir. Swami would probably just come and say a few words and go away. And you would say that, you know, you don't have to be told that now sit and think of what Swami has told you. You would automatically like want to, you know, be in that moment for a few minutes, think of what Swami said, or, you know, completely replay that event of Swami walking to you and saying something. So when Swami is saying this in one paragraph, you know, you fill your mind with work, and whenever there is a gap, you fill it with contemplation, fill it with I think Swami made us do that without telling that, you know, this is what I'm trying to make you do.
This kind of reminds me of a conversation that I had with our warden, now the current director of the, you know, institute, Shivashankar Sai sir. So during his early days as a warden, he had this a kind of dilemma. Swami had told him in the interview that these are young minds, young children, and they need to be preoccupied. Their mind, just fill their minds with work. The timetable should be so tight that they should not have time to think as to what would be the next...
No idle time.
No idle time, right. Then he had kind of arranged the entire schedule that way. Now, that is where the darshan timing comes in. So literally 4 hours of apparently no work. So he had this dilemma in mind. He was a little hesitant to ask Swami as to, Swami, what happened during this time? You know, this late 4 hours, in the it's a quite big chunk of time. And imagine 2,000 students sitting in, and he had all sorts of wild thoughts going, what would the students do? And strangely, he started observing that they were very quiet during those times. In fact, they were much better than the earlier times in hostel. He was hesitant to ask Swami, but, you know, the doubt just kept growing and growing. And one day Swami comes, starts the conversation, how boys are in the hostel, etc. Goes on. And after 2-3 minutes in conversation, Swami smiles and tells him, see, boys must be very quiet in mandir than in hostel, is it not? He says, yes, Swami. Swami says, that is because their minds are tuned to Swami, tuned to God. When mind is tuned to God, it automatically silences. And Swami walks away.
In fact, I think that is what Hislop is, I mean, Swami is going to explain to Hislop in the next few paragraphs. The importance of, you know, the being in tune to God, having all your desires centered on God. And, you know, every time you hear an explanation like this, it only makes you think, if not for that personality of Swami, none of this would have made sense, right? True. I mean, coming from a general background, coming from having done a degree, I mean, you tell that you should desire for God. I don't think I would have ever been able to relate to this if not for that personality, his presence in our life.
That is why, you know, that becomes so special and such a big blessing. But at the same time, you know, it is not as if the personality alone is that divinity, because divinity, one aspect is the personality. There is so much, you know, when we are speaking about stilling the mind in Bhagwan's presence, I witnessed something less than a month ago. You know, I had visited a friend's place where he had a guest, and this guest had a child who was suffering from both, you know, autism as well as Down syndrome. So because of that, there would be bouts of extreme violence and aggression. So these children usually are unable to express their emotions like normal children, because of which they are prone to, you know, bouts of this, what looks like aggressive behavior. You know, she would throw around stuff and anything that comes in her reach, she'll just take it and throw it and shout and, you know, really look like very agitated and upset. And this kind of a bout happened in my presence also, and I was just wondering, now what do they do? I mean, the only solution that came in my mind was possibly, you know, put her and shut her in a room which is, damage proof, in the sense it should be not having any dangerous objects there, some bed and something, let her calm down. But what the father did was he shouted, get the iPad. And when he was saying that, I was thinking, oh, maybe this is how it is. You know, iPad, we have seen kids addicted and sitting. I thought even for such kids, iPad is only the cure. But in the iPad, he instantly went to Radio Sai, the app, and put on the bhajans. And he plugged it in and put it into her ears. It was amazing for me. You know, like more than half my life I have kept speaking and communicating to people about the power of God, the glory of God, that Lord's name is supreme. In spite of having done that, it was amazing for me to see that instantly she calms down. After some time, started singing some of the bhajans. It was amazing, and then the mother says that this is the only cure. This is the only thing, the minute we put on bhajans. And it is not any bhajan also. I don't know. That is the magic I feel of Sai bhajans. And I feel that's because, you know, Prem, if you remember during the last satsang, we spoke about how Swami had advised, was it Kannamma, or saying that, you know, whatever mantra you are chanting, just add Sai to that and it's fine, it will work, you know. So, in the same manner, the Sai Bhajan seems to have that magical effect on her, and it instantly calms her down. And so I, you know, it comes as a very strong realization that it's not just about, you know, music, because it is often said that music has a calming effect. It's not just about music or any external things related to the senses. There is something inexplicable, mysterious, and awesome about the power of God, about the divine power, that affects everyone. And I brought up this case because this is a case where you will assume that the mind doesn't have much control or much role. Even in such places, the divine name, the divine power works, which shows that it is definitely something beyond the mind. In another case that comes to my mind is about an acquaintance who was a devotee of Swami. Due to what I consider as unfortunate and tragic circumstances, he lost his faith in Swami and doesn't believe in Swami anymore, if you can say that way. But still, every now and then, I know that he calls up different people who are associated with Swami's bhajans and discusses Swami's bhajans and says, this is a new bhajan I've got. And he actually composes and sings bhajans on Swami. This is amazing, you know. So, see, all said and done, even the form and name is something that is worldly. It is worldly in the sense it is not permanent. We saw how the form has left. But the divine power is something beyond everything, because even though this is a person who doesn't have an affinity to the name and form, in fact, he doesn't like the name and form, he continues to make bhajans in the glory of this name and form. So it, all these, you know, just make me feel that there is something mysterious and amazing which cannot be explained, which has to be experienced by each individual. And I feel once you experience it, you don't need an explanation.
This reminds me of another incident. We must be meeting M. Prakash Rao uncle. He's a very good dramatist. He kind of wrote 100 dramas.
Right.
He's probably one of the very few devotees to whom Swami has blessed him with 10 rings. All his 10 fingers have...
Oh my God.
Each finger has a ring. So his mother, she is, I think, 84 or 85. She had a heart problem and she was admitted in hospital. She was in ICU. Doctors told him that she has just 4 hours. So we don't want to trouble her with all those oxygen masks and fluids and all that. Let her just, in that old age, let her just pass away. And they were just waiting her to pass away. She was in ICU. So all that she could muster was just with those whatever strength, she had feeble strength, she called her son, that is Prakash's uncle, and told him, you sing Sai bhajans. So he was of the opinion that probably she wants to listen to those bhajans in the last passing moments. So he and his wife and his, I think he's one of his cousins, says that, and they started singing bhajans. 1 hour they sang bhajans, and later she picked up.
Who? The mother?
The mother. So 1 hour, when 1 hour became 2 hours, then it became 4 hours, then 6 hours. She continuously kept on singing bhajans for 18 hours.
My God.
At the end of 18th hour, the same lady who was actually brought in a stretcher, she got up, walked out of the hospital. The doctors had no word. They said, we have not seen, they are some of the best cardiologists in Andhra Pradesh, in Visakhapatnam. They just, when she was walking out, they just folded her hands and said, you are a miracle lady. She said, me, I am not the miracle. The name that I sang, that is the real miracle. You hold on to that name and miracles like this will happen every day in your life.
Beautiful.
On that note, dear listeners, we will take a quick little break and continue this discussion. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this break.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and let's continue our discussion after that beautiful bhajan. One of the things which Swami mentions before we carry on from there is the importance of time. Swami says one might find it difficult to surrender to God, but every man surrenders to time. I think there's another beautiful message which Swami gives. I don't know whether we've come across that already in the conversations where Swami says human life is governed by four aspects: karma, kala, kartavya, and karanam. Swami says that
one of the early conversations also,
right, where Swami says that, you know, according to time, doing whatever you're supposed to do itself becomes a form of worship, right? Where when Swami is saying here that time is God and surrender yourself to time, which means according to desha kala paristhiti, or you know, the time, circumstances and the situation you are in, you act according to that, and that itself is going to, and that's what Swami would tell us even as students, you know, just do what you're supposed to do at each stage of the day or each part of the day. That automatically will ensure that you lead a disciplined life. But the question that Hislop asks from here is very important, because he's not asking about any regular disciplined life, but he's asking about something more specific.
You know, when you were speaking about time, it just got triggered that somehow if we notice generally the people around, even those who say that, you know, they don't, those who say it openly that they don't believe in God, or those who those who bow down to the Ganesha temple here, or they don't mind bowing down their head and taking prasad, but God is not an important part in their life because they have their life to carry on. Most of the people somehow, or even for that case, even if you take the so-called devotees, you know, who spend quite some time of their day or week in the so-called spiritual activities and rituals, irrespective of what category people fall into, everyone somehow, once they reach an elder age, an older age, say beyond 50 or 60, we see that somehow they turn into the deeper aspects of life towards God. It almost seems to happen by the passage of time, you know. And here Swami says that first there is work, then there is wisdom, then there is love. You know, Swami would often call bhakti, karma, jnana as the three W's: work, worship and wisdom. So it is almost like irrespective of who you are or what you are, as long as you keep working and doing your, you know, daily job, you may call it worldly, but as you keep doing it, over time, automatically experience, maturity sets in, a wisdom comes in, somehow that makes most of the people seek deeper and more meaningful, purposeful things in life, which mostly turns out to be God. Those who might not have even entered a temple in their youthful years, once it comes to old age, somehow they turn towards God, it happens. And so, in that sense, I really feel time is definitely God, because with the passage of time, people become more mature, more spiritual. And I would not hazard into going into that Telugu, but I think Swami used to often quote one poem about that Musala Pandaga or something like that. There's a festival. He would keep telling that whatever you may do, don't forget that coming ahead in life is a festival of old age. I think, you know, though Swami would tell it in a hilarious manner, it is significant that he called old age as a festival, because I think truly we can rejoice in life when we start focusing on the deeper and divine aspects, and somehow it happens that when we reach old age, we start thinking of that.
Now, I think this is also probably one of the classic confusions which is there for a spiritual aspirant, you know. What is a better usage of time? Are you supposed to act? Are you supposed to do your duties? Or is it better to sit and contemplate on God? Right? And Swami's answer has been clear, and Swami's answer has been historic from the time of Lord Krishna, where he says, what you're supposed to do, you do. And Swami would quote that Sanskrit phrase where you say, namak karmane, right? Tasmai namak karmane.
Tasmai namak karmane, yes.
Which means it is like, and in the ancient, I think one of the elders was once telling me, why do we touch the feet of elderly people? As an Indian tradition, we have that. It's apparently nothing but you saluting the karma that they have performed. That any person who has lived more years than you, at least in this physical body, has been performing their duty diligently, and it is that karma that you're saluting. And karma is represented by the body, and the body is supported by the leg, and that's why you touch the feet. It's a way of you expressing your respects to the duty that person has performed. And you know, that's why Swami is saying that the importance of you surrendering to time before you even surrender to God, or surrendering to time as a means of surrendering to God, is very, very important.
Maybe that's why you feel automatically inclined to touch some people's feet and maybe not others, you know. Maybe intuitively you feel somebody who has performed all good karma. I mean, when it comes to Swami, I think as many times in a day we would automatically feel. Now, I'm just sharing this because I don't know, somehow, apart from family, when you see outsiders, there are some elders, some elderly people whom, when you see itself, you just feel like touching their feet.
True.
I think it's there in their aura, that good karma, the good action that they have done.
This Raman Rao Sir's experience, he was quite agnostic about God and also philosophy of God. So when he heard of Swami giving darshan, he was completely hesitant even to approach the wall in beyond which Swami is giving darshan.
Oh, in some other place, is it?
In Hyderabad, during his younger days, before he got to know of Swami. But somehow, because of some strange circumstances, he ended up going on the road, and there are a lot of crowds. He had to park his two-wheeler, and he was just waiting for the crowd to clear. And suddenly the crowd opens up, and Swami walks towards him. And something happens. And Swami turns back and leaves. He notices that both his hands are actually together and doing namaskar.
Okay.
There's a strong urge in him to fall at Swami's feet. He's controlling himself. This happened not once, twice, but every time that Swami approached him. That is when he realized that there's something much beyond this physical form. That was actually the trigger for him to seek Swami and explore a lot more about Swami.
Wow.
And this work experience also, I'm sure, Arvind, you recollect those interactions that Swami had with alumni. You know, in Bhajan Hall, alumni were called in, and senior alumni.
Mm.
They have kind of worked. They have worked for quite some time and extremely high positions, very busy people. They're just not able to make it to Parthi. So Swami is explaining that how happy he is seeing the boys come back. So one of the senior brothers, I remember, he had tears in his eyes, with moist eyes, at the end of the Bhajan Hall, just softly murmured. Even we could not hear, but Swami, that heart-to-heart connection, he heard it. He said, Swami, what if we can't make it because we are so tied up in the world, in the work? Swami just, very beautifully, Swami said, work with the intention that you are worshipping me and I am always with you. I think probably that is what we all need to do, just to turn that work into worship with installing Swami in the work.
You know, it is Swami that makes everything. I was remembering an episode narrated by our brother Arvind Sai from Radio Sai. It was his form days, as we would call it, when Swami was interacting with them as the Burakatha team on a regular basis. So Arvind Sai was undergoing some dental treatment. So he had to go to Anantpur for that, which is a good 2 hours away, 2 hours drive or 2 hours by train from Puttaparthi, from Prashant Nilayam. So those days, as he was receiving all the attention, so for everything he would inform Swami. So one evening Swami just told him that, yes, so you should do this every day, you know, bhajans and singing. And Swami is very, very, you know, we have seen this also. Swami is so, punctual. Yeah, he gives so much importance to the bhajan timing. Like if you remember, Swami would come out speaking to all the students there. And suddenly the omkaram or the flute will begin and Swami will just say, no, we have to go, no, bhajan time. Almost like, hey, it's now bhajan time, now we can't do anything, we have to go back. I mean, he is the one who is holding the whole bhajan. It's for him that the session is, there is no rule for him, and yet he would be there. He would stop talking, he would stop doing everything, because bhajan deserved that respect. And when Swami told this to Arvind Sai, that you also follow this every day, 5:30 bhajan. He told Swami, tomorrow one day I will not be able to do the bhajan. Swami said, why? He said, Swami, because I'm going to Anandpur. Swami said, so what? He said, Swami, so for 5:30 I'll be in the train, Swami, so I won't be able to do bhajan. Swami said, 5:30 you'll be in the train, but why you can't do bhajan? Do bhajan. Then Swami told him, remember, if you can't come for bhajan, I will come for the bhajan, but you do it. It was such a beautiful revelation, and it shows that the place the paraphernalia, the ritual, all that only aids and adds on. They are not of paramount importance. The primary importance is that we offer ourselves to God. That is what Swami is looking for.
Right. And going back to this discussion which Hislop is having, clearly you can see that he is asking about a technique by which the mind can be silenced. He's going to come to that. But you can make out that that's where he's heading. So when Swami is saying that you fill your time with work, you do whatever you're supposed to do. So he goes on to ask, he says, Swami, but you had said the other day that if the mind was quiet and receptive, then perhaps Swami would come into the mind and speak. And Swami responds by saying, if the desire to communicate with Swami is sufficient, intense and strong, then the mind will be sufficiently quiet for Swami to speak. But the problem is that we do not have that intensity in our lives. I think one of the things which Swami is saying is, I don't know, when I first read this is what I thought. Wanting to have a silent mind or a peaceful, a peace in the mind is one thing, but wanting to have that communion with Swami is a different thing. And Swami is suggesting that craving to have that communion with Swami will give you that silence automatically. But when you're talking about silence in general, when you're talking about how the mind can be made a little more quiet, I think for that the solution that Swami gives is fill it with activity, fill it with work, and whenever there is an opportunity, always bring in contemplation also.
This kind of reminds me one interesting experience that I had just this morning. Whenever I'm Parthi, I kind of make it my habit to go to meditation tree and meditate.
The Vatavriksha.
And if you have noticed, there are around Vatavriksha, there are huge, big trees. On that, many of the bats, they kind of rest for the day, because bats get active in the night. And these bats have an eternal enmity with the crows. So during the mornings, the bats rest and the crows come and
disturb
the bats. And in the night, it's the opposite. Bats go and disturb the crows. So, and most of the bats will be hanging just somewhere above the Vatavriksha. I have noticed that yesterday and today, I go and sit for meditation and invariably some crows and bats start ending up fighting and the bats screech
at
a very high pitch. You just can't concentrate. I have tried like yesterday almost 45 minutes to concentrate on my breath, what is actually suggested by Vipassana, but I could not. This morning also similar thing happened and I kind of got vexed. I was in tears. And saying, Swami, if not for anything, please allow me to think of you. And I started thinking of those times when Swami would come for darshan and Swami would speak to many of us. He would instruct. And the beautiful memories, it's like a flow, it's happening. And I realized, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I have an alarm which goes off at every 30 minutes. Alarm went off 31 minutes. That is when I realized that all the 31 minutes, strangely, the bats have not made a single noise.
Or maybe you are deaf to the noise.
I thought so. Then I opened my eyes, the bat started screeching again. And 2 minutes I waited, then again those thoughts, it was like a flow of emotion. Swami was speaking and that came up, I closed my eyes and this time I was kind of aware. I was trying to listen if the bats make noise or not. But believe me, for some strange reason, till the thought about Swami lasted, the Sevadals who were sitting behind me, they stopped speaking. There were some visitors who actually have come to the museum. For some strange reason, they also went silent, and the bats have also gone silent. It kind of reinforced in me that the world is just a reflection. And when you log your mind with that intensity to the Lord, the world kind of conspires and connives to help you.
I also would love to agree to this, fact about Swami when he says that there is no intensity. Because many times, having experienced that intensity and the magic of the connect, I'm sure all of us, all devotees, every one of us, in some way or the other have experienced the magic of that connect with Swami. And it's an amazing feeling. And we would like to be in that connect always, but it just doesn't happen. So when the connect doesn't happen for a long time, that's when you feel a kind of dryness and you feel, a boredom. You feel that everything is useless, everything is futile, and you long for that connect. You know, for me at least, it expresses as tears. After some time, I just break down and I just cry in front of Swami, feeling so sad that I'm not feeling the connect. And you know, even as I'm crying, somewhere within me I'm feeling a little joy, because I know that this is it. This kind of yearning and longing is the precursor for the connect. And there is a very deep-seated confidence and faith that by tomorrow or day after, something is going to happen magical. You know, either Vibhuti will appear in the photo, or Swami will come in the dream, or something will happen that makes me feel so beautifully connected to Swami. So, now, you know, my quest for connectedness has actually transformed itself into a quest for intensity. I just wish that I can yearn for Swami with that intensity, and I think that is the magic, because that is exactly what Swami is saying here also. Problem is, we do not have that intensity in our life. When the intensity is there, automatically there will be silence, as Ranganath Raju experienced, and automatically you will get that connect with Swami. So it is as easy or as difficult as that.
And I think that is the technique that Swami speaks. In fact, if I'm not wrong, in Dharmavani, Swami speaks of this. Mm. When he speaks about concentration, contemplation leading to meditation. Swami would say, first of all, none of you are doing meditation. Don't ever be under that illusion. Most of you are concentrating. At best, you're trying to reach that state of contemplation. Mm. And Swami would say that contemplation is that state where you kind of lose track of time to a certain extent, because you are lost in the thoughts of that mantra or that object that you're meditating upon. And Swami would say how easy it becomes when love comes into the picture. You know, when you are in love with the form that you're thinking of, right? And Swami would say that this is about everything, right? And even something worldly, we can actually get lost thinking of something. And the moment you think of something which is so pure, when you think of God, when you have struck a relationship like that and you can think of God and get lost in it, Swami says, first of all, concentration to contemplation becomes very, very easy, because you're not forcing yourself to think at one thing. You've transcended that effort part and you're effortlessly thinking.
It's spontaneous.
Right? And because what you're thinking about is so pure, it automatically starts purifying your thoughts. It automatically starts silencing your mind. Swami is saying here, when that yearning is there, that yearning comes out of love, it takes care of the rest. You don't have to put that effort. And I think that's where Hislop's next question comes when we go to that. But before that, anything else you'd like to add?
For this meditation, when we are entering into this topic of meditation, I'm reminded of another incident. We were helping for Nellore district Parthyatra drama, and that drama happened to be about the Rajas, Venkatagiri Raja's family. Hmm. It's basically, the story is about Venkatagiri Raja and his
their association with Bhagwan,
with Swami. So one very particular incident struck me so deeply. You know, Venkatagiri Raja is probably one of the very few people who had seen Swami as, or rather Swami had blessed him with the darshan of Sri Ramachandra in this form.
Hmm.
But there is a bit of history to that. Now, Venkatagiri Raja had the habit of doing or practicing chanting of Lord's name, Rama's name, at a particular time, at a given time.
Every day.
Come what, I think it's morning 9 o'clock in the morning and 6 in the evening. Come what may, wherever he is, he would, at that particular stroke of the hour, he'll start for next 30 minutes, he'll chant Rama's name. There are occasions where he was sent as a representative of Indian government to Russia, and in the middle of the discussion, he would say, now it's 9 in the morning, Mr. Ambassador, please wait, I have to go and chant Rama's name.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was quite embarrassing for the entourage, but yet he would continue to do it. So it went on to such an extent that he would not give up. And people have come and advising that, please, you know, you can move 9 to 9.15 or 9.30. He would not do that. And that day, that particular day when Swami was giving him darshan Sri Ramachandra, evening 6, bhajan started. And Swami was physically sitting in bhajans. And it was, I think, 10 minutes before 5.50 or something like that, bhajan started. 10 minutes into the bhajan, it's almost around 6. Now Raja gets up and walks away. It was insulting apparently physically to Swami, that when Swami is physically sitting, how can Raja get up and just walk away? Hmm. He's basically going into that other room for meditation. His younger son, he runs behind Raja and tries to tell him that Swami is sitting. No, he's Rama himself. When Rama is sitting there, why do you want to go? Raja says, no. This is my discipline. I have to follow it. Come what may. And he goes, and as the conversation goes on, Swami walks behind them. Now, the younger son is little, he doesn't know how to explain the situation, odd situation. Swami kind of looks at him and says, I know what he's doing, you go. So this younger one goes away. Raja, unmindful of Swami's presence, he sits and starts chanting that Namaste. That's when Swami goes in front of him. And as Raja explains later, Swami gives him that darshan.
And later, as Lord Sri Rama.
As Lord Sri Rama. He tells him that the Rama that you're yearning for has come now. Open your eyes.
Hmm.
And when he opens it, it is Rama standing there, and he falls. And that's when Swami writes that he 2 days later, he tells the family, says, and which is also written in the mission statement of that poem, Niyama Nishtala Thoda Nanugol Chuvarala Patti Kapadu Chundute Ganatanaku. Those who worship me with Niyama and Nishta.
Discipline and
purity, Nishta.
Hmm.
Those two. Have them, and protecting those is glory to me. I hold them and I protect them. That is glory to me. I think probably one of the tenets of meditation is that discipline. And Swami also in Dhyanavan emphasizes that choose a time, choose a day. And I'm sure you must recollect from the interviews of Raja Reddy Garu. You know, he would come what may, he would go and sit for meditation at 6 in the evening.
Right.
It went to such an extent that day his mother passed away. He was hurrying up. You know, for what? He was hurrying up with her funerals. And they were asking, this is probably the lowest day in your life.
Mm.
He says, no. We have to finish the funeral before 5:50. Why? Because 6 o'clock I have to go and sit for meditation.
Mm.
And Swami responded to it, I think, 4 days later, saying that is the discipline. That's why he's Raja.
You know, when you hear all this, you realize that meditation is, or contemplation, whatever, time that we give to God is about the intensity as well as the discipline. When we feel that we are not getting results, it's possibly because we lack one or the other. You know, some of us, sometimes we may get the intensity, but it is a one-off, or it comes haphazardly once in a while. I know that perfectly. I am a perfect epitome of that. I know that when I get intensity, it is so beautiful. At the same time, I know how haphazard it is. There's no discipline in there. Or the other thing also, I think, that Swami makes it very clear, is of no use, it doesn't work. However stringent your discipline is, if that intensity, yearning, that love is not there, it becomes more like a chore, it becomes like a work, it becomes like a task that has to be accomplished. There's so much of pressure that there's no pleasure at all. So I think we can take this message that we need both intensity as well as discipline. Going ahead with the discussion, you know, Hislop asks Swami, because as Swami says that the problem is that we do not have that intensity in our lives. Then Hislop says, the Buddha's way of slowing down the mind is given a lot of attention in Burma. It's possible that Hislop had been to Burma and that's why he's stating it. And then he says, Swami must have a better way. You know, he's questioning Swami because maybe he tried out that and he found it not so easy. So he's saying, you have a better way. And Swami says, the Buddha's way of watching the breath as it enters and leaves the nostrils is just a beginning, just for a few minutes before the meditation begins. Making it very clear that is not meditation by itself. There is no better way to quiet the mind. There is only one way. Sitting in meditation, the question often comes up, how long to sit? There is no answer. There is no particular time. Meditation is really an all-day long process. The sun shines and the sunlight falls here and there. What is the difference between the sun and sunlight? And Hislop says, there is no difference, Swami. Then Swami says, in the same way, all is God. Thoughts, desires, all are God. All thoughts should be regarded as God. And then Hislop persists by saying, but Swami, there is still the puzzle on how to slow down the activity of the mind. And Swami replies, really there is no mind. It's a question of what is desired. With God as the only desire, all will be well.
So I think where the question comes from is pretty clear. When Swami is telling that there should be intensity and love for God, when you're talking of the Buddha's method, there is no concept of God in, you know, in Buddhism in that sense. It's all about perfecting your being, right? And he is referring to this idea of looking at the breath. I'm not too sure who actually mentioned this. Somebody had a very similar discussion with Swami, I think one of our lecturers, one of our very, very senior lecturers.
Mm-hmm.
And he was referring to this practice of Buddha, and Swami was actually explaining this practice of Buddha, and where he said he constantly would, you know, meditate on the breath coming in, coming out. And for many, many years he was doing that, but he felt that he was not able to reach that point. And maybe some other time I'll get the details right and we'll narrate it. But then he was realizing that, you know, between that state which he was trying to reach, Nirvana, and the state he had reached, there was still a gap. He was not able to, you know, transcend that for a very long time. And Swami had hinted that that gap was the love which was missing. And he actually, you know, when he realizes that, that is when he reaches the Nirvana. Some very profound explanation which is not there anywhere else. Swami says that, you know, that was what was missing in his approach. And, you know, even here when Swami is saying about meditating on the breath, Swami says it's a very, you know, it's a foolproof method. It definitely works. In fact, Swami himself has spoken about it any number of times, where you concentrate on soham and you concentrate on how the breath goes in and comes out. But that is not the ultimate, and that always can only be a preparatory stage, is what Swami is saying here.
Yes, I am kind of reminded of one more our alumna's experience. She is from Anantapur. She has also attended Vipassana training and quite advanced in that Vipassana method of meditation. So, which is essentially Vipassana is nothing but Vipassati, just be an observant to the activities in the body. You become so observant that when your mind starts focusing, you reach to an extent where you would actually see your stomach churning the food, your blood rushing through the vessels of your body, and your cells vibrating. But beyond a point, initially it's very exhilarating, and you know it's very fascinating. But when it gets repetitive, you would know that, yeah, this is what my body is. After that is where you reach that plateau. And she had reached the plateau, she was praying intensely for some guidance. It went to such an extent that she thought it's just a waste of time, she is not progressing at all. That is where very strangely through 2 to 3 discourses and also Radio Sai discourses of Swami, the verbal discourse of Swami, she got a guidance that what she should be doing now on is focus on the form of the Lord. And that's when she started doing that, focusing in the meditation state. She would initially, it's a step-by-step process where you control the breath, then you become observant, the activities of the body, which is the second step. Third activity is focusing on the form of the Lord. Then she realized that what she had been stuck with nearly 3 to 4 years, the progress was so rapid that within next 1.5 to 2 months, she had reached what was in a meditation people call as level 4. Level 7 is supposed to be the highest. Level 4 she had reached, and she just happened 1.5 months. And all that she says is that is because the form of the Lord is an instrument. That's where, you know, it's a very deep spiritual significance that the form acquires in that aspect. To a true sadhaka, that is actually the medium through which he can concentrate the mind and take it, because it's an alluring object that mind can easily stick onto. And Bhageshwar Swami told him one of the interviews, tells him that the form of the Lord is like the rope that is thrown to you when you are in the water. Hold on to it and just keep climbing. It's like the rope. And hold on to it and just keep climbing, and you would one day realize that you have actually climbed the entire hill.
Out from the water, and you maybe that time don't need the rope as well.
Yeah, don't need the rope as well, yes.
I think the next point which he is asking you about meditation, even as I was reading that, you know, he is, I think, persisting with the idea of how to silence the mind, you know, how to quieten the thoughts which come in. And the answer which Swami gives is very, very profound. He's saying there's nothing like the mind. Everything is God, and everything that is in the mind which expresses as thoughts is only an expression of God. You know, if you look at it, the last expression of whatever activity which we are doing is what the mind thinks when it is quiet. Like even when you talk about the dream state, Swami would say that whatever you have done during the day, when you go to sleep, the subconscious mind will throw up that with, of course, a little bit of whatever is there in the past. And all that mix up is what throws up. Similarly, whatever I'm doing throughout the day is what I will think when I'm left alone, invariably. You know, when I'm in silence, if I've seen movies in the morning, you would see that. You know, especially if we had the opportunity to observe ourselves when in Swami's presence. You know, you're not given so much of the media content in that way through your day. Probably once a week or when you go for a vacation, you tend to see a movie. You would see how prominently it plays up in your mind.
Absolutely,
you see that different scenes acting up in your mind. Right?
Even like I have seen this happening to me. I started playing a video game which was a car racing game. I liked it. I got attracted to it. I played it like 2 to 3 hours at a stretch. You won't believe it. That night when I'm going to sleep, though it's complete black, the entire scenery, the car, the controls, it went on. The video game went on in my head for so many hours before I could actually go to sleep. No wonder they say you are what you repeatedly do.
Right. And here is Hislop asking, you know, it's like you're coming to the last stage and you're asking, how do I sort out things there? Mm. You know, it can be done to a certain extent. The only example that I was thinking of is, you know, suppose you're cooking a dish. To a small extent, you can refine the taste in the last stage. You know, add a little bit of salt, or add a little bit of spice, or you squeeze the lemon. You can enhance the taste a little bit. But the entire taste is based on what you've collected, the ingredients and the process of cooking. If you want the final product to be really good, you have to start with the ingredients and the process. There's only a little bit you can do in the last stage, you know, sort out that taste a little bit. I think that's what is with the mind. When I sit down now, to a certain extent, I can think of Swami, I can take a mantra, contemplate on that and silence my mind. If I really am looking at silencing my mind, I have to start from what goes inside. What do I do? And I think that's why Swami is saying the work that you do, and not only any work, but take up that work as worship. As you know, there was this, we've been referring to him many, many times, Martin Seligman's work, where he says, you know, there are different kind of things with which you fill your time. Either you fill it with pursuing pleasure, you fill it with something which gives you engagement, or you fill it with something that gives you purpose. Right? And when he talks about engagement, he says that, you know, there are many, many activities which can keep you really engaged. In fact, for that, the example that you gave of playing a video game, it completely sucks you up inside. You know, you're into that game completely.
Keeps you engaged, focused.
Your senses are involved, your mind is involved. But he says at the end of the day, when you look back at your day, you will feel that you wasted time. Right? And says that is the problem with engaging work which is not purposeful. But when you've done some work which is also purposeful, you will find a kind of satisfaction and you will actually find a sense of peace towards the end of the day. You will feel that that's a day well spent, that's a time well spent, and your mind was used for doing something well. So as Swami is saying here, first of all, work. Fill the time with work and don't stop at it at doing it as work or as your professional work. Can you look at it as this is my worship to Swami or this is my offering to Swami? So you're filling it with work and you're also making that work purposeful in a sense. So that is a way by which you're kind of filtering things that go into your mind at a stage where you should be doing it, rather than taking everything inside and then you're trying to filter and you're trying to purify, which is not the most effective way.
Yes, and going forward, I think Swami, probably in the next 2-3, the paragraph Swami makes mention of food kind of impacting the mind. Now, I had on the similar lines a very strange experience. You know, because I end up traveling for work for most of the days in a week, and I end up having food in some places. I mean, in some
hotels, restaurants,
etc. And we were driving late in the night. For some very good reasons, Swami has prompted me within. I was in kind of a rigorous, I would say, discipline, spiritual discipline, where ensuring that what I take is also cleaned and it is kind of. I was very, very mindful of what I was doing, everything. But that day, for some reason, we were late in the night, 11:30, somehow I had to go there and find food. I was feeling very hungry. So the driver stopped somewhere near Corporation Circle. And there's a very small joint where, you know, things are being prepared, dosa and food and all that. I've heard Swami telling many times the food actually impacts. And Swami says the food is not just the material that goes in, it's also through the 5 senses. It's also the person who makes it. Very important.
Paka Shuddhi, Padartha Shuddhi, Patra Shuddhi.
So, you know, I heard it, but I never kind of believed it. But I should not say I believed it, but I never experienced it. We had the food, and then we were driving back. 20 minutes into the drive, the driver also had, driver who is generally very calm and composed, I was also under the spiritual, supposedly strong discipline. And there was one bicycle person who just brushed the car and went away. It's a small brush which is usual in the high traffic of Bangalore. Mornings probably would have got 10 to 20 times of the brushing. Suddenly the driver turned so violent. He was very abusive. I felt very strange. But for some strange reason, I also started getting very angry, very agitated. And that night, very disturbed sleep. Whoever comes in contact with me, I was either getting angry or there was some turbulence within. Next morning, I ended up praying intensely, saying that, Lord, please guide me. What's happening? I don't know what's happening. Then the total from the hotel, we were actually passing by. And there is one inspector who kind of became my friend, traffic inspector. So he was telling me, sir, you know, we kind of help criminals to come back to better ways of living. And, you know, there's one particular joint in that particular place. It's actually a person who had very troubled past and extremely violent behavior. So we helped him set up the joint. And I asked him, sir, is this the joint that you're referring to? He said, that joint happened to be the place where I actually ended up having food the previous night. So probably maybe he's reforming, but yet he's not in that state that the mind is so, what do I say, it's like the sponge. It absorbs everything, absorbs and observes everything. And it kind of gets affected with that.
I know we are actually jumping the gun because that comes a little ahead in the discussion. We'll reach to that hopefully today. But because Raju has narrated it, it just reminds me of how Swami narrated in the Ramkatha Rasavahini, in the Ramayana story when Rama Lakshmana, you know, Lakshmana is such a brother who feels that everything that Rama does is what I want to do. In fact, when Rama tells him, build a hut at a place of your choice, he sheds tears and asks Rama, what have I done? What sin have I done that you tell me to pick a place of my choice? Is there anything like my choice and your choice? Such a Lakshmana, at one point in time, Swami says that he says, brother, what foolishness, what are you doing, what is the dharma, I mean, what are you, what has the dharma done, what is this, where are we, and all this. And Rama is simply smiling, and after they walk little ahead, then when they are, you know, Lakshmana comes back to his senses, he apologizes profusely to Rama, and Rama tells Lakshmana that, no, no, it is not your fault. We were passing through a territory, I don't know if it's Shurpanaka or Tataka.
Shurpanaka.
Yeah, it's a territory belonging to that demoness, so you got influenced like this. Swami also narrates the Chinnakatha of a person, of a hermit, who goes to a person's home and when he's having food, he's tempted to steal the silver tumbler and he's very ashamed. He goes to his guru and he says, I don't know why I got this. And he says, no, no, that because the food that was cooked there, and you know, that has a history. So multiple things Swami shows that the Swami narrates to show that vibrations do play a very important role. And yes, so when it comes to meditation and focusing on God, that's why I think, you know, as we go ahead, we'll see that Swami says that food, it plays a very important role. You know, as Swami would say in Hindi, jaise an, vaise man, vaise tan.
And talking about Lakshmana, you know, I would often think of the same episode of him refusing to choose a spot to set up a hut. And I would actually contrast it with what he says at the end of the war. He will look at Rama and say, why don't we stay back here in Lanka. Right? You know, one person who refused to build a hut of in a place is saying that let's shift base to Lanka. You know, probably that was also a sthala prabhava. Because, you know, Ravana was a person who was attracted to Lanka. I think the story goes that it was a kingdom that he usurps from someone.
From Kubera.
Right. He does not belong to Lanka. He comes from somewhere midland where India is right now, and he actually takes away that. Probably that influence was also there on Lakshmana when he said that, why don't we take over this kingdom instead of going back to in Ayodhya. But that's a very, very important point that Swami would often say. But I think what is probably we can take courage from is the same Lakshmana did not give himself up to those negative feelings. He just had to move away from that place, and his own, you know, good intentions start kicking in after that. Probably that's another point which Swami is saying, that, you know, you fill your, whenever you get that gap between work or gap between what you're supposed to do, fill it with good ideas and good thoughts. So that becomes your spontaneous reaction. And Swami would also say that, you know, the moment you get something, some thought coming, I think that is also something which Swami is going to talk about now. Don't follow it up. Don't let your mind get carried away by the thoughts which come. You should be able to stand back and say that, you know, this is a good thought, this is a bad thought. So that also is part of, because otherwise Swami would say there's no way you can be sure of who's cooking your food and whether he's having good thoughts or whether he's, you know, clean otherwise. So it's impossible. So you can at least start by purifying your impulses.
And of course, what Swami would say is, Brahma, because you can't do all this, yes, there is Brahmarpanam, which I'm sure many of us forget before many of our meals.
Raju must have forgotten to do that.
Yes. If you're defining it difficult to do Brahmarpanam, Swami is, you know, my daughter tells me that I will chant Harirdata, and her only rationale is because Harirdata is just four lines long, it gets over fast.
You know, talking about Brahmarpan, probably it's a aside, but I mean, I just heard it from one of our senior brothers in the ashram, and I thought it's very, very beautiful. See, finally, it's all intention, right? It's not about a mantra. It's not about the perfection, even when you're talking about your daughter saying that this is shorter. So he was saying that it was during one of the summer courses. We were talking about Vrindavan Golden Jubilee, and I was talking to this brother, and he said that I'm not from Vrindavan, but I have one of my most fond memories from Vrindavan. So he was saying it was during one of the summer courses, and Swami had given a discourse about Brahman and Atman and all that. And he said, I don't know what Swami said. Swami spoke very highly of Brahman, of course. But he said at the end of it, Swami said, that same Brahman is Sai. And he said, that stuck in my mind. You know, that is the only part which is most striking for me, and that stuck in my mind. So he was saying the next day, Swami comes to the dining hall for one of the dining sessions, which Swami used to come very often. So Swami was going around, and everybody was served, everybody was seated. Then Swami said, start. So we know that that's a cue to start Brahmarpanam, right? So when everybody started Brahmarpanam, so this brother said, Swami, yesterday only you said that Sai is Brahma, Sai is Brahman. So why should we chant Brahmarpanam? I will chant Saishwararpanam. So he said that in his mind, he chanted the entire Brahmarpanam, replacing wherever Brahma comes with Sai. Right? He said, because Swami said everything is one and the same, and I find it more easier offering it to Sai than, you know, Brahma or Brahman or any concept like that. So he said that he stood there and he kind of chanted that whole thing with this, you know, command F replace in our modern computer language.
Control C, Control V.
And he chanted this whole thing. And when it came to Aham Vaishvana Robhutva, he said, Swami, why should I chant this part? This is your part. Right? Because Swami had explained that Aham Vaishvana Robhutva is the answer from response within. So he said, Swami, this is not my part. This is actually your part. And he said when he had this thought in his mind, for that entire Aham Vaishvana Robhutva, wherever Swami was standing, Swami suddenly stopped, turned to where he was standing, and Swami started staring at him. And for those entire four lines when the boys were chanting Aham Vaishvana Robhutva, Swami kept on staring at him. And then Swami turned and walked away.
Beautiful.
So he said, you know, this is an acknowledgement not only for the fact that, you know, me replacing Brahma with Sai is appropriate. And Swami was also responding to this idea that, yes, this is my part. So he says, till today, I do not chant Brahmarpanam, I only chant Saishwararpanam. And I do not chant Aham Vaishvana Robhutva, because that is Swami's part.
Wow.
And, you know, that's what it is. That's what can happen, you know, when you connect to whatever you're meditating, whatever you're offering, whatever you're praying. Because it takes it to the next level, as you know, you were telling about that sister also.
Yes.
Because that is the greatest gift Swami has given. Because that connect with which you can do all of this sadhana is many steps higher.
You know, I feel that is why it is not right to actually compare and contrast ourselves with what others are doing as sadhana. Maybe in the beginning, you know, it is like a level playing field where each one takes up something till we get the connect. But once the connect is obtained, I think it's a very personalized path which Swami Taylor makes for each and every one of us. And that's the beauty of the path. Each one is unique. Each one is amazing. It's almost like, you know, how in school fairs we would have this person dressed as a clown or something and comes with a bag of goodies. And it'll all be different. And he would ask, you pick. And each one of us gets something unique. And there was a thrill in the fact that it's not the same chocolate everyone gets or the same toy everyone gets. Each one gets a different toy, and I think that's how it is with Swami also. Till we get the connect, maybe we do it. But once we get the connect, it is a personalized path. For instance, I don't think it will be right on my part to say that, okay, from now on, I also will give away, stop chanting the second half. Or for that matter, if that brother who are narrated, you know, he's made the, in some way he becomes a warden of the institute hostel. It would not be right for him to impose a rule saying that, hey, from now on, you know, we chant only first four lines of the Brahmarpanam, that too replacing Brahma with Sai. It's not like this. I say this because there was a time, I won't name the place, but in a samiti that I was there, you know, a lot of Devi chantings would happen. You know, it was very strange. First of all, you know, a bhajan session is very simple. We see how it happens in Prashantilyam. Begins with Om, bhajans, aarti, finish. Now, you go to different samitis in different parts of the country or maybe in the world also. Each one has a different set. Okay, somebody will chant Sai Gayatri, somebody will chant Bhurbhoswa before, then the Vibhuti Mantra. All this I could understand, but in some place suddenly a lot of Devi chantings. It just turned out that that district president or state president or whoever was in charge there had got an interview with Swami and he had confessed to Swami and Swami had blessed him to do this Devi thing. I just felt on that is your personal sadhana with Swami. You can't come and impose that on the organization here like that. So this was my opinion and I feel very strongly that that is what happens. That is the reason why when somebody says we may possibly enjoy their experience and get inspired, but it would be foolish to blindly take over that as my sadhana because it's a very personalized path. That is why it is of paramount importance that we build our intensity and get the connect.
In fact, you know, one more beautiful interaction that I recall, in fact, it happened in public during one of the world conferences, 97, 99, I'm not sure of the year. It's there in Satya Sai Speaks, where Swami had said that if you have any questions, you can ask me. And one of the delegates had asked this question, Swami, what is the right way to chant the Gayatri Mantra? You know, some people sing it, they've put a tune to it and they sing it, you know, different ways of chanting. And any of us would have expected that Swami will probably chant out and say that, you know, this is the one, you stick to this. And Swami has himself done that in some of the discourses where Swami recited. Swami asked the audience to repeat after him. But Swami's answer was so beautiful, simple, and, you know, whatever Swami has been telling here. Swami said, who is Gayatri? Gayatri is mother. And will the mother say that you have to call me in this way, that way, with this correct pronunciation, don't sing, don't chant this way? She will only expect that you call out with love. Right? And Swami said, Gayatri is mother, you call out with love. You know, whatever you chant, you want to sing, you want to recite, but do it with love. Do it with the feeling that you're calling out to your mother. That is all that matters. You know, how, because that is what is going to make you connect. It's not about,
correct,
at least to a certain extent, intonations and all of that matter, as Swami has also said, you know, the sound, vibrations. But beyond a certain point, it is whether you're able to connect to the Lord with love and with that one.
That bhava that Swami speaks about. I remember reading in the that famous series of book called The Chicken Soup for the Soul, in that there was, I don't know if it's an anecdote or just a story, but it was so beautiful about a child who goes and tells the Lord that, Lord, I actually don't know the prayer. I mean, they might have taught him the Christian prayer, Our Father thou art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. So he says, I don't know that. I'm sure you know it. And I know that it consists of alphabets. So I'll tell A to Z 5 times. You please make the prayer yourself. And I'm sure that God would have been very, very happy with that prayer. So that boy just stands there saying A to Z 5 times and says, Lord, make your prayer with these letters.
So this Parthiyatra time, many of these devotees who are from hinterland, from rural villages, you know, they come. So I was witness to a very beautiful interaction with Swami and one farmer. This farmer, for the first time in his life, has actually stepped out of his village near Peddapalli. I've told this also in Kulwanthal, in Swami's presence.
So you narrated this incident.
Yes, I've narrated this incident. So Swami, they had come as that time formal parthiyatras have not started, but groups used to come. And in that group, this was also this farmer who was actually sitting in that corner where Swami would take 90 degrees turn in the gent side.
Okay.
Heading straight to that shutter.
Towards the, yes, the ex-students area.
Yes, ex-students area. So he was sitting exactly in that corner. He was, you know, he had various opinions about gurus, babas. So he was thinking that, and someone told him, some of the sevadal told him that you can talk to Swami. He's your father, he's your mother. Don't hesitate, just talk to Swami. Initially, as he came into the hall, he was enamored by the size of the hall, that hundreds of devotees sitting. He did not know what to speak. But the Sevadar told him, you can speak, whatever comes to your mind, you speak to him. And so Swami was taking the turn. This old devotee, this farmer, who is quite old, he got up and he said, Namaste Anna. So pure Telangana slang, Namaste Anna.
Namaste raising
anna.
One hand.
Yeah, raising one hand, Namaste Anna Baguna Vane. Which means, brother, Namaskaram, how are you? Sevadar was trying to hold him back, pull him down. And Swami turns back, looks at him and says, Bagundane Anna, in that same slang, in the same intonation. He says, I am all right, Anna. And Swami walks away. It is that bhava, I think, God is just that reflection of your purity of intention.
And that is why I think, Swami tells Hislop, I'll reread what Swami says. Swami says, really there is no mind, it's a question of what is desired. With God as the only desire, all will be well. So it makes it so simple for us, because we need to realize that all we need to focus on is yearning for Swami, desiring Swami. And once that is done, all other things automatically fall in place. The sadhana, the meditation, the contemplation, everything, concentration. On that note, dear listeners, as the clock in our studio shows just 5 minutes to go before the segment can conclude, I would like to place our deepest gratitude at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan for this wonderful opportunity. Special thanks to Brother Raju for joining us and, enlightening us with so many little anecdotes and his own personal experience in Vipassana meditation, which actually, it's experience that adds weight and adds so much of meaning and wisdom. So we are thankful to Swami for having sent him. He was just happening to drop by the studio. He does a lot of work for the Telugu team. And I just pounced on him and asked, Raju, join us in this. And he was gracious enough to do so. So it was wonderful. Thank you, Raju. On that note, dear listeners, we will close with a song, on the other side of which you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
ఆనాడి గోపికనే జనించితే మరల చూడాలి ఆబాల గోపాలం వేచేనయ్యా.
Listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.